The next case of the morning is number 042689, Janet Schneider against Century Group Long-Term Disability Plan.
We've cleared the entire courtroom out.
Good afternoon, Your Honors, Mr. Fredericks. My name is Scott Taylor.
Mr. Taylor.
And I represent the plaintiff in this matter, the plaintiff appellant Janet Schneider. This is an appeal from the decision order by Judge Shabazz in the Western District of Wisconsin granting the summary judgment motion of the defendant and denying the summary judgment motion of the plaintiff. In granting summary judgment, the district court found that although the notice of termination of Ms. Schneider's benefits did not state the specific plan provision on which the denial was based or the steps necessary to take an appeal, the letter of April 23, 2003 from the defendant was nonetheless substantially compliant with 29 U.S.C. Section 1133 and also 29 CFR Section 2560.503. Further, the court concluded that the defendant's decision to terminate the benefits was not an arbitrary and capricious decision. The plaintiffs in this matter would contend that the court here doesn't even have to reach the arbitrary and capricious standard, that because the defendants failed to substantially comply with the ERISA notice requirements, that need not be reached.
Has Dr. Simo been deposed by now?
There was, because this is the arbitrary and capricious standard, there and also because the review was limited to the record that was before the plan administrator, there was no discovery.
Uh-huh. So the record will never tell us what he meant in that March 24th letter.
Yes, that's true. The record, the record before the plan administrator will never tell us, not only for the reason that there's no discovery, but also for the reason that the defendant asked their nurse who was tracking this case about 2 weeks before the review was complete to close out her file. And Dr. Samo had actually sent a letter clarifying that previous letter to the nurse in this matter, but that evidently never made it to the plan administrator because she was directed to close her file.
And just one other question. You're seeking back benefits from the time of denial until the present.
That's correct.
Okay. Has Ms. Schneider been working at any job during that time?
She has recently, the last time I spoke with her, for about the last 3 or 4 months, she has taken a part-time job as an instructor at Madison Area Technical College, teaching an insurance course. It's a part-time position. It's our contention that the district court's decision failed to properly apply this court's holding in Halpin v. Granger, in Wolf versus J.C. Penney, prior to that, in the more recent decisions in Donato and Hackett. As this court very well knows, Halpin is more or less the seminal case on strict or substantial compliance with Section 1133, and it's been adopted by 7 other circuits. And the rationale is clear why Section 1133 and the rules adopted by the Secretary in applying Section 33 exist. It minimizes frivolous lawsuits, it provides a non-adversarial dispute process, and also decreases the cost and time of the claim settlement process. Here, there was really no ability to do any of that based on the April 23, 2003 letter, which is essentially 2 sentences. It tells Ms. Schneider, we're terminating your benefits because, number one, of the independent medical exam, number two, based on the recent letter from your doctor. If you'll note from the letter, it doesn't say we're enclosing this information for review. It simply says you're no longer disabled and your benefits are terminated. I've searched thoroughly the entire file. I haven't found anything to indicate that Ms. Schneider ever received a copy of the independent medical exam from Dr. Spear. And that's part of what this whole process is is supposed to do with Section 1133 is to foster open communication between the plan administrator and the claimant. But that wasn't done here. It seems to me that Century, the defendant, did everything they could not to let Ms. Schneider review the record, determine why her benefits were terminated, and to present a cogent argument in her defense as to why she should still have benefits.
You're seeking back benefits as a remedy from this court, as I understand it.
That's correct.
Is there any authority for us to award that as a remedy for a procedural violation?
Yes. The court's recent decision in Hackett clearly explains that there's a difference between an initial denial of benefits and a termination of benefits that have been continuing. The court determined in Hackett that when we're dealing with a termination of benefits as opposed to initial denial, the only appropriate remedy for a procedural violation is the retroactive reinstatement of the benefits with a remand back to the plan administrator to make the determination that they should have made in the first place. And I think that's pretty clear in Hackett. When I go back to the Wolf case, and compare it to the Wolf case and the Halpin case, actually, and compare it to the April 23rd denial or termination letter in this case. In the Wolf case, there was actually a much better termination letter in which they actually gave much more detailed information as to the right to supplement the record and the right to appeal, as well as the reason for the termination. The court in Wolf found that wasn't enough. In Halpin, there was only one of the four requirements under 2560 that weren't complied with, and the Halpin court found that wasn't enough. Here, we contend that none of the four requirements under 1133 and 2560 were met. And those four requirements are laid out, and certainly even the district court found that the provision found that the specific reason for the denial was met only because that there was an IME that essentially laid out what Dr. Spire said. The court admits there was no specific reference to the pertinent plan provision in which the denial was based. The defendant also admits that. The district court somehow says that the June 9, 2003 letter by the plan administrator upholding the benefits somehow, because it referenced the pertinent plan provision, somehow that remedies the initial notice letter. There certainly was not a description of any additional material or information necessary for Ms. Schneider to perfect her claim and an explanation as to why the material was necessary. And obviously, sub 4 of 2560 says that there has to be appropriate information as to the steps to be taken if the participant or beneficiary wishes to submit his or her claim for review. That obviously is not included in that letter. The district court found that because she inartfully requested management to answer a few questions, that was an appeal pursuant to the terms of the ERISA policy, and that somehow remedies the defendant's failure to adhere to sub 4 of 2560. The defendant's termination of the benefits precluded the plaintiff from being able to address the determinative issues and have a fair chance to present her case. Here she doesn't know exactly what they're relying on, so she doesn't have an opportunity to present her case. In Donato, which this court decided, it was held that the failure to meet subsections 1 and 3 of 2560, that basically it wouldn't have taken a great deal of information to meet those subsections, that all they have to do is state the specific reasons. And basically, in the Donato case, they were conclusions, not reasons. That's what we have in this case. We have conclusions, not reasoning. Because Janet Schneider didn't have the opportunity to submit a thoughtful appeal in this matter, we would contend that this needs to be remanded with a retroactive reinstatement of benefits and remanded to the district court for an opportunity to present a bill of cost and attorney fees for their consideration. I'll reserve the balance for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. We'll hear now from Mr. Fredericks.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. If I could start with the remedy real quick, start backwards, in other words. In order for you to award retroactive benefits in this case, you will be deciding that her disability prevents her from returning to work. That will be the effect of your decision. That decision will be contrary to a defense doctor's examination of not only her and her records, but her own treating physician's agreement that she is ready to return to work.
Well, let me tell you what my problem is. Federal regulations require the notice of a denial of claim to contain four pieces of information. I mean, which ones do you believe you met? By my count, you met at most one, and that would be true only if I were very generous in my reading of the denial letter. And I'm wondering if there's a case out there where we found substantial compliance with such paltry information.
I'm not aware of one either, Judge, and I'm not going to quibble with you over the four requirements because I can't.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. The key here, however, is that the letter is very specific. It tells her exactly why it is they're terminating her benefits. She knows why. 3 weeks later, she acknowledges it. She, in fact, agrees with it. Her own doctor agrees with it. And I'm not aware of any case that I could find anyway, Judge, where the defense doctor gave an opinion, the treating doctor gave an opinion, and then that was found somehow to be arbitrary and capricious on the part of the employer or the plan administrator, if you will. This is a case where, frankly, Sentry was correct in their decision. There was nothing arbitrary and capricious about what they did. The record supports that. How better can you get from the plan administrator standpoint than to send that defense examiner's report to the treating physician, have the treating physician agree with it? And bear in mind, the treating physician is asked two very simple questions. Number one, do you agree or disagree with this? And number two, if you don't, explain why.
Yeah, but see, again, Ms. Schneider argues that we should consider Dr. Samo's June 3rd, 2003 letter because the only reason the plan administrator did not have it is that, you know, the nurse was told to close the file on Ms. Schneider before the plan administrator's review was complete. I mean, it's a hard argument to respond to.
Well, I don't think so, Judge. The plan administrator has to make their decision based on the record before them. The record before them is her own treating physician, Dr. Samo, saying, I agree, she can go back to work. Now, is the plan administrator supposed to wait a certain amount of time for that treating physician to change their mind? Of course not. 3 weeks later, she asks for the review. In fact, she says she agrees. She's happy to go back to work. They then do the review per her request and uphold their decision and terminate the benefits. How it is, frankly, she goes back to her doctor and gets a complete opposite opinion from Dr. Samo is beyond me. I guess we'd have to ask Dr. Samo that, but we can't because we didn't do discovery in this case.
Well, you know, I mean, it certainly would seem that she didn't have any idea that she was formally appealing, and it also would seem that she didn't have any idea of what information to submit in support of her claim. And here we are with, you know, these seemingly conflicted letters from her doctor, and yet, you know, she has no opportunity to have him explain what he meant, and you have no opportunity to know what he meant, and we have no opportunity to know what he meant.
I disagree, Judge, with all due respect.
No, that's okay.
That March 24 letter from Dr. Samo is crystal clear. You asked counsel that earlier. Do we know what he meant? Did you take his deposition? No, we didn't. He meant what he said. He said what he meant. That's why he wrote the letter. It doesn't get any more clear than that. There's a sentence in there. He states it specifically. I agree, and I don't have it in front of me, but you, I'm sure do. I agree she can return to work. And then he goes on and explains, and at the end he says, obviously she'd want some flexibility. Well, who wouldn't? Everybody wants flexibility in their work schedule. But he had every opportunity in reading that single-spaced, 7.5-page report to explain how or why it is he thought Dr. Spirer was missing something, was in error, didn't read something in the records, didn't take something into account when he examined Ms. Schneider, and he didn't. He didn't. He was asked to do it, and he didn't do it. So I think that letter speaks for itself, Your Honor. Unless there's any other further questions, I don't have anything else. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel.
Just briefly, and I'm looking at the March 24, 2003 letter from Dr. Samo. It's a complete misinterpretation to say that she can return to her former position. This was an own occupation policy. This was a determination as to whether she could return to her prior position. He says she's interested in discussing possibilities. Nowhere in here is it said, or was it inquired of Dr. Samo whether she could return to her former position. And that's why it was misconstrued. Certainly, if Ms. Schneider could have supplemented the record, clarified things, but she was never given that opportunity because she was never put on notice. That's all I have.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. My thanks to both counsel in the case. The case will be taken under advisement. The court has finished the call of the morning, and therefore we will rise until 9:30 tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you.